Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddham saranam gacchami. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Sangham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi. Buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi. Sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi. Buddham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami. All honor to the renowned, world-honored Buddha who's brought us this practice. And we take refuge three times in the Buddha, in the Dhamma, and in the Sangha. So those are the chants you hear in monasteries throughout Southeast Asia when they say the refuges. In Buddhism, we don't have any particular, or at least in Theravada Buddhism, we don't have any particular ornate ordinations. Essentially, you just chant the refuges and set your heart in the direction of the practice with the triple gems, the first being taking refuge in the Buddha, which is the historical Buddha. It's also, more importantly, our Buddha nature and our own hearts and minds, and that which is wholesome and pure, and the aspects of ourselves we hope to cultivate. And taking refuge in the Dhamma is the teachings. Dharma in Sanskrit, Dhamma in Pali, language of the Buddha. And that's the teachings, the truth, the way. But very interestingly, it's your truth with guidance from the Buddha and other teachers perhaps. But the beautiful thing about this practice is it really is your practice. You and your life and your experience is your teacher. People who sit up in front of the room are Kalyanamitas, spiritual friends, who just share what they've run across along the path and their experience. But ultimately, that's what you want to learn from, is your own experience, what you find today. And then refuge in the Sangha, the community of practitioners. We in this room today, your family, your community, or as Trudy Goodman likes to say, it could be as broad as the Sangha of Stars. Sangha of the Stars. And we have the precepts, which I will not do in Pali, because I can't. It's funny, you would recite in this one monastery is at near Mandalay, the precepts along with the Sayadaw, the abbot of the monastery, and we were always messing up the pronunciation. And at one point, the Sayadaw was holding a screen in front of his face, which you usually do to show that you are not giving the talk, it is coming through you. So he'd have a screen in front of his face, but we could see him cracking up because we screwed up the pronunciation so bad. It was like he couldn't contain himself. So I won't give you the opportunity to laugh. But essentially, the precepts, some of them apply. They all apply one time or another. To refrain from killing. And that is, again, your practice. That can mean being a vegetarian. That can mean just not committing murder. It really is your practice. However you see your own practice as dictating the way you should interpret that precept, that's the way you do it. To refrain from stealing, taking that which is not given, refraining from false speech, that should be easy today, as well as not using sex inappropriately or drugs inappropriately. We don't have much, unless we drink too much coffee, I think we're okay on the last one. So I would ask you to take those precepts and hold them. Good precepts to live your life by. It's interesting, as one little anecdote about the precept to not take what is not given, only take what is given. The Sayadaw was giving a talk in this monastery, and he was coughing terribly. And so someone brought some water, did not give it to him, brought some water and put it on the arm of his chair. But they had not given it to him. And he took it literally. You had to actually hand it to him. And then it was given to him. He could take it. Perhaps that was a little extreme. He was coughing away. But it's a practice. It's a beautiful practice. And great humility in this Western culture where some consider greed as good. It's lovely also when the food is brought to the tables in the dining hall. The people bringing the food will actually lift the table, and then the monks will touch the table underneath to accept what has been given, which is a good thing. They don't have to do every dish. So any questions about today's schedule, the practice, what we're embarking on? I think we've got some veterans here. Okay. So I'll begin with some brief sitting instructions, because it looks like most of you have a pretty good idea what this is about. So, taking a comfortable posture, where you remain erect, upright, so your spine is straight, so that your breathing can be free and your energy can move freely up and down the spine. But you don't want to be stiff, rigid, relaxed, but alert. Letting your eyes close gently. And if you get sleepy, you can open your eyes and just look down at the ground in front of you. You can even stand up if you need to, if you're getting real sleepy. I've tried to pace this, so we'll be doing some movement after lunch. And there's coffee. So feel where you're sitting. Sensation of the cushion underneath your body or your feet. Sensation of your buttocks sitting. Hearing sounds come and go. In other words, bring your attention to the realm of the senses, whatever is predominant. And then let your awareness gently find your breath. Feeling the in-breath from the inception of the breath as it comes in and fills your lungs, fills them fully. Note that point of turnaround as you begin to exhale. And I would invite you to relax as you exhale. One of the seven factors of awakening, the Buddha mentioned, is calm. And a good time to cultivate calm, I find, is on the out-breath, relaxing, seeing where there is tension in the body. Might be tension in the forehead, in the muscles behind the eyebrows, in the eyes themselves. Or if you're like me, in the neck and the shoulders. And a lot of people carry a lot of tension and stress there. Holding it in a kind awareness, a non-judgmental awareness. So you can relax and open to your experience, be present. As I've mentioned before, the body sensations are always in present time, so aligning our awareness with the body sensations brings us into the present. And when your mind wanders, as it will, just to gently say, not now, not now, and come back to the object of awareness. Now, if those thoughts become powerful and not now doesn't work, you just keep obsessing about something, open the meditation to that, but not on the conceptual level, not on the discursive linear thought level. Try to open to the sensations in the body, again, being in the present with what those thoughts are generating. They often reveal what's fueling those thoughts or what's beneath them. And most of all, I really encourage you as much as possible to just enjoy this day, being alive. It's a precious gift. So enjoy your practice.